What if I told you there's a way you could be a second shooter at a family session so you can see exactly how the photographer prepares, how they interact with their clients, what they say when they're posing, or when they choose to use fluid motion, what they do when kids might not cooperate or dad might not be in the session? What if I told you there's a way you can see what the gear is that they're using, where they're positioning themselves when they're shooting, what factors they're taking into consideration when they're shooting? What if I told you there was a way you could see what their straight out of camera images look like, and then you could see their editing process too, so you know exactly how they get those start to finish images and those polished ones you see in your Instagram feed? Now, what if I told you could be that second shooter without ever having to leave your house? What if I told you that not only do you get to watch it from home, but you didn't have to remember every single thing you were trying to learn the first time you watched it? What if you could watch and rewatch as much as you wanted? How would that improve your images, your posing, your confidence? Now, what if I told you there is a way you could be a second shooter not only for one photographer, but 26? That's exactly what you'll experience inside the 2024 Online Family Retreat. Your inspiration will soar, your art will improve, your posing will become more fluid, and your confidence is going to increase so, so much. And honestly, your clients are going to feel so much more comfortable. Head on over to themilkyway.ca/family retreat. It all gets underway May 29th, and we hope to see you there.
That resistance that you're talking about is such a great sign. That's a good thing. We only feel that when we're doing something challenging and fulfilling and hard, what I call the important work. So no one gets that foot dragging feeling about busy work, you know, or the stuff that doesn't make us feel stretched. We only get it when it comes to stuff that is in some way going to move the needle for us or break us through to another creative or personal or professional level. So I'm really excited to hear where this series takes you, because the fact that you're having that feeling about it means that it's really important. I love to use that resistance feeling as a compass. So when I start getting that foot dragging resistance feeling, that's when I know I'm headed in the right direction and that it's time to double down and charge at it.
Welcome to the Art and Soul Show, where we dive into heart-opening chats on photography, business, life, and that messy in-between. I'm your host, Lisa DeJaso, a mom, a photographer, and entrepreneur, and I'll be sharing honest conversations and advice for photographers with insight on mindset, entrepreneurship, and creativity. The goal of this podcast is for you to be able to gain insights and strategies that will get you real results. Because let's face it, having a photography business can be lonely, but it doesn't have to be. This is the place you can go when you need a boost of encouragement, a kick in the pants, and inspiration to pick up your camera. This is the Art and Soul Show. Hello, my beautiful friends. Welcome back to the show. Today, I am super excited to dive into today's conversation with Michelle McKay. Now, she is a photographic artist located in Geelong, Australia. Her in-home photography business specializes in all things newborn, and her personal work and lifelong obsession is documenting what she coins the beautiful ordinary, catching memories and making an honest and artful record of real life, all while teaching other photographers how to do the same. She's the host of We Are Memory Catchers Community, teacher of Telling Stories, which is a 15-week course that explores specifics on how to make more intentional and artful storytelling imagery. She's the creator of the popular Memory Catcher editing presets and two-time instructor of the Milky Way Online Newborn Retreat. The stories Michelle creates for her client families take place in their own homes. The space she's discovered provides a perfect backdrop for an organic and understated experience, resulting in photographs that are meaningful, creative, relaxed, joyful, and unique to each client family she's privileged to meet and serve. I loved chatting with Michelle so much, we knew we had to bring her back. Now, I love our conversation so much, so if you haven't listened to Michelle's previous interview on the show, definitely head back and check it out. Without further ado, here is Michelle. Welcome back, Michelle.
Lisa, thank you so much for that beautiful introduction.
I am so excited to have you back on the show. So I usually start my interviews with tell us who you are and what you're passionate about, but I want to start today with tell us who you are and what you're most excited about your life at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. So my name's Michelle. I live in Geelong, Australia with my husband and our two kids. They're 6 and 8. I have a photography business specializing in in-home photography. I sort of specialize in newborns and young families in the in-home space. I host an online community for photographers called We Are Memory Catchers, and that's a space for folk who make photographs that sort of catch memories, whether for their own families, as sort of a family historian, or as a business person. I teach telling stories, like you mentioned, which is a 15-week course where we sort of deep dive into how to make more intentional and artful storytelling imagery. It's super fun. I make the memory catcher presets. And yeah, that's basically me in a nutshell. What am I excited about at the moment? I'm really excited about moving into our new house. We purchased a new house recently. We move in on the 21st of December, which I'm sure you'll agree is a perfect time to move home. But I'm really excited about making new photographs there. I sort of do a lot of documenting our lives on a day-to-day basis. So I've always sort of joked that there should be some kind of photographer house exchange program.
Yes.
Because it's just really exciting to be able to go into a new space and learn the new light there and sort of experiment with the different spaces that you've sort of got presented to you. So I'm really excited to move into the new house. I was the other day, we were standing in the kitchen and I was just gushing about the way the light was pouring in over the kitchen sink. And Francis, my husband, joked that he's going to have "look at that light" etched onto my gravestone because it's the single thing I say most any given day. And I'm pretty happy with that, I think.
Oh, I love that. You need a shirt that says "look at that light." I love it. Now, what I love about you is your approach to photography. Now, you love to show and document and embrace the honesty of photography and document the beautiful ordinary. Now, I think in the world of social media and fake reality, it's really refreshing to see your art as truth-telling and, as you have said, an honest and artful record of real life. Now, can you share how you help your students overcome mindset shifts to embrace that messy, to fall in love what they see and capture it for their clients?
Yeah, gosh, it's such a process, and it takes a little while to really sort of unravel and shake up the belief systems that are sort of embedded in us these days as a result of social media. I think with the invent of social media, this is sort of a really challenging time to be an artist. And the reason that I think that is that while we artistic types have sort of always been tempted to compare our progress and our output with sort of creative peers, now that we're all on Insta and it's like a platform that's sort of designed to really trap us in this scrolling, habitual scrolling, creative peers now has sort of become this basically bottomless pit of top tier artists with their own goals and motives and experience, all creating content that's right there and right for comparison. So there's overcoming that and all the confusing thoughts and sort of maladjusted belief systems relating to what it means to be an artist and how to judge our success in the artistic space. And then there's sort of figuring out how to put that aside, sort of compartmentalizing it if you can, and separating that from what our personal intentions are when we come to the creative space with our photography. And so sort of getting really clear on intention and why we're making photographs, I think, is sort of the first step. And that why is sort of going to change depending on the audience of the work and for whom it's being made. So my why for my client work is very different to the reasons I make photographs on a personal level.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the output is different. So with my client work, I sort of aim for that to feel really relaxed and natural, but it can be quite guided because my intention is to make photographs for my clients that conjure up feelings and stories to do with romance and sentimentality and nostalgia. And those feelings of falling in love that's true and distinct to each family. But when a session only lasts sort of an hour or so, we don't always have the luxury of time to wait for those moments to happen organically. So I guide that while I'm visiting so that I can bottle sort of a day's worth of moments into that smaller window. But with my personal work, that's all about catching sort of real life, unadulterated memories, like sort of right now, because our ordinary lives are just so beautiful and important and worthy. And I'm sort of really hungry and obsessed with making photographs of what feels real and what life really looks like and how beautiful that honesty is and how much more I'm sort of drawn to things that are that little bit less shiny and a little bit less generic. So when people join the Memory Catcher community and when I teach telling stories, that's sort of where we end up doing a lot of digging with our explorations. And I think it's because deep down we're all craving a little bit of that truth and honesty and the permission to sort of see our own lives as beautiful and okay just as they are. I find that when my students get clear on those intentions of why they're making the photographs, they get a lot of peace and clarity from that. And then we do a lot of sort of questioning and reflecting and sharing through this process. And I think that witnessing other people being vulnerable with their own lives is often where a lot of the epiphanies happen. Once we sort of see and celebrate the beauty of someone else's messy real life, it becomes more of a possibility to be able to see the beauty in our own.
I love that so much. I wish you were around when my little was little. Because, when my son was probably between the ages of, 4 to 9, we were going through a major home renovation. And my home, we stripped it to the studs. It was ugly. And we lived through it. Looking back at some of the photos and everything, I'm like, holy crumb. I don't even know how I would even attempt to make this beautiful. But it was the raw honesty of what was occurring at the time.
Yes, how good. That was just the thought of that makes me, I get excited tingles in my body. To be able to document a process like that. Oh, so good, Lisa. Those photos must feel really precious to you now looking back.
They do now. And I'm glad I pulled up my camera. There's this one picture of my husband and my son eating dinner together. And our dinner table is literally a piece of plywood and there's scaffolding behind them. It was takeout boxes. And that was just so indicative of our life at that moment.
So rich with story.
Right. But I never posted it. I was ashamed. I was ashamed of it in that moment because it didn't look like that picture perfect Instagram house. And so I stopped myself from photographing my own life so many times because of that shame and humiliation of my life doesn't look like that. And that is a huge regret.
Yeah. Huge. Yeah. Right? And what you're identifying is something that I hear a lot. So many people are going through this process and having these thoughts and feelings. It's just so indicative of our time, I think. And yeah, so I think having spaces where you can go to talk that out is really awesome.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wish you were around. I wish I had found you earlier. No, I loved reading that you wrote. There's a tendency to get quite formulaic with our client work, cycling through a set shot list and ticking the boxes. When you loosen your hold on that approach and instead see each shoot as a creative collaboration between yourself and your client, there's real opportunity for play that can lead to unique and original imagery, more closely representative of each family you serve. Now, I loved this so much. So can you elaborate a little bit more on this? Because I think so many of us, myself included, really have a tendency to fall in that rut and that's truly when our photography spark starts to go out.
I think it can be really tempting to have a short list and want to rely on it when we're working with our client families. Sort of for new photographers, having a plan and having those sort of go-to photographs is a way to feel safe in a situation that is otherwise pretty new and scary. And there are already sort of so many unknowns. So being able to control something is, you can really latch onto that. And for more seasoned photographers like you, who's just been doing it for such a long time, it's just sort of really easy to slide into a groove with our flow. It's super efficient. And after so many shoots, you sort of get to learn what works and what's popular and what will sell and all of those things. But being rigid about how we approach all of our shoots is also how our work begins to look the same. And when I say the same, I mean the same as all the other photos we've made and also the same as the photos our competition are making, whether local or otherwise, because we're all likely drinking from the same wells of inspiration and have read the same cheat sheets and are sort of coming from that same sort of baseline. And so, like you said, this is where the creative spark can often sort of go out. We can start to feel a little bit uninspired and start sort of questioning what's the point.
Yep.
We're our best creative selves, I think, when we're sort of stretching and learning and experimenting. That's just sort of how the artist's mind works. So when we stop challenging and testing and taking those creative risks, we can get really bored and feel flat and uninspired. And we're also not going to stand out. And in a competitive industry, especially when you've not established a solid client base, what you really need is to have a point of difference, sort of a unique selling proposition that will make you more attractive to potential clients. So when we're all making the same stuff, a client's going to fall very quickly to price as the point of comparison, unless you show them other ways you're not the same. So the way I do that is to sort of see each shoot as a sort of creative exercise or endeavor. Each time I meet a new client family, there are shots I'll always make for sure. But what I'm really excited about is while I'm there, what can I make that sort of distinctly and originally them and distinctly and originally us, like sort of me and them together as a sort of collaboration. So what can I try to do during the shoot that I've never done before? What fresh and original ways can I tell this same sort of reoccurring story? And I think a lot of us sort of want to shoot this way, but I think we're often afraid. I can remember sort of driving home from a shoot years ago, kicking myself mentally in the car because there's something that I'd really felt inspired to do in the moment, but I was too scared to ask the client if they were up for it. So it didn't happen. And that's sort of the worst feeling to me, knowing that I didn't do something that would have been potentially awesome because I was afraid of rejection, of it not being good enough or it not turning out and then looking like a fraud. But if we can learn to stop being sort of concerned about judging if something that we do is good and instead immerse ourselves in the joy of the process, as opposed to the resulting product that we make, then I think we can sort of open ourselves up to taking more risks and then all these kinds of happy surprises and originality can result.
Love that. It's so true. It's like we get in our own way with the fear.
We get in our own way with the fear, 100%.
Right? And it's funny because it's like a client will never hire you hoping that you're going to fail.
No.
Right.
And they don't know what's happening. They don't know the inner thoughts that are happening in your head. And they, even if they did, they'd understand that this is a process. Like you're coming in there into their home to do something that they have no idea about. You are the expert. They are in your hands. They want you to lead them and guide them and show them and tell them what to do. They're just so happy. Honestly, the amount of times I've suggested something to a client and they've sort of said, oh, I'd sort of rather not, like, once or twice ever in, 6 or 7 years. And also the one or two times that it did happen, it really didn't matter. I knew I'd made the ask. So I felt I got that off my shoulders. I didn't have to go home and think if only, what if, and all of these things. And the client would have their own reasons. And we just went on and did other things and it was fine and perfect. And the client was super happy and the photos were beautiful. And this rejection that we're so afraid of just really isn't as scary as we sort of make it out to be in our heads, I think.
Yeah. And it's so funny because like the worst thing is like telling a client like, oh, that shot didn't turn out. Like, that's not going to kill you. It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop anybody's heart. Like,
no.
That shot I wanted to try, it didn't work out.
That's it.
It could be blurry, like for a variety of reasons. The lighting wasn't right. It was blurry. It was this. It was that.
100%. Like, and even if it helps, like you can just fully disclose, like, oh, I'd love to try something a little bit new. I'm not sure if it's going to work. It's just an experiment. But let's just roll with it for a second and see what happens. Yeah. And then you've put it out there that this is new. This is something sort of you're playing. Like this is just a game. And then if it doesn't work, just be like, oh, no, actually, that's that's not working for me. That's not what I thought I'd do. Let's try this instead. And sort of treating it like that collaboration instead of it being like this secret that you're holding over here and hoping that the client doesn't figure it out. The collaboration approach can sort of open up doorways of communication that can lead to real sort of inspiration in the moment.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny that like I just was thinking back, like how I've used that, like, I'm not sure if this is going to work out. I really would love to try this. I've never done this before and I want to do it with you. Like, how special does that make your client feel?
I feel like such a privilege. Yeah.
I'd be like, wow, she's never done this and she wants to do this with us. Like, this is incredible. Thank you. Right?
Yeah. And it really feeds back into that being like this special experience. It's not just about the photographs, but it's about creating this beautiful experience with the client that they can take away and have a record of through the photographs. It's really nice connecting like that, I think.
So full disclosure, I am coming back from severe artistic burnout. After years of undercharging and overbooking myself, I am recovering from what you previously described, ticking boxes, and truly the joy really went out for me. I think there's an expectation we have of ourselves after burning out that we should kind of snap back into it. And that's truly not the case for me. Like I kind of compare it back to like when I was pregnant and I had this figure before my pregnancy and now I'm like expecting myself to snap back into it and it's never going to be the same. So have you ever experienced in burnout and do you have any tips for recovering from artistic burnout?
Oh, look, I think that creative burnout is so common for photographers. And I think that's because for many of us, we're sort of taking what was previously our creative outlet and turned it into work. And it's a tricky thing to sort of get your head around because that's the goal, right? To find a way to make money doing the thing that we love. But most people, most of the time, I think, sort of stop approaching photography as an exploration in creativity when they start doing it for work. And I can't even tell you sort of how often it comes up in the memory catcher community that someone sort of will say that they wish they had time to join in with one of the creative challenges that we run in the group, but they feel like they can't because they don't have the time and they're just so buried in client work. Or someone will joke that they have like a backlog of personal editing dating back pre-COVID. And, you know, we'll all laugh.
2010?
Right? We all laugh because it's true. But that's also another sign that the artist is sort of approaching a burnout and isn't taking the time for creative pleasure anymore. So a few things. First is rest. Rest is really important and it's not something that we tend to do a lot of when we're running our own business. There's always another job to do. But as a creative person, taking breaks and having rests is really important. If we want to be able to sort of keep creative and be able to sort of continue to create from a place of joy and abundance. So my favorite analogy about this one comes from the world of agriculture. So in order to sort of get the best and the most from the land, the farmer has to respect and follow a cycle. And the cycle goes through four processes of till, sow, reap, and fallow. So at the start of the cycle, they're tilling the land and getting the land ready for planting. And then they sow the seeds. So they plant all the things, they tend to them while they grow. Happy days. The third step is the reaping. So you gather the harvest and enjoy the abundance that's resulted from all your hard work. But it's the final step in the cycle that's often forgotten. And that's the fallow period. So after reaping the rewards of the harvest, the land needs to be left alone for a while. It needs to rest. And if you push ahead and get back to planting straight away, you'll be okay for a minute, but within a few cycles, the return diminishes to the point that nothing grows. Like nothing grows. And so it's the same for the artist. We need to sort of respect that cycle of preparing and then creating and then reaping the rewards of our work and then having that fallow period, taking that time. So after reaping the rewards, we need to sort of take a break and have a rest. We need the fallow. We need that time of rest for all of the other parts of and components of the cycle to be able to do their work. So this is why honouring your creative cycle by taking a beat for rest, for inspiration and education, letting your inner artist child play with photography but also other artistic expressions is so golden and also vital to creative longevity and happiness. Some of the other things that I recommend for blocked or burnout photographers is to find a way to create for fun and for pleasure that you aren't expecting to ever be paid for, because that allows you to sort of tap into that beginner mindset. And it's the quickest way to soothe your sort of inner artist child, letting them do something badly for the joy of it. So you can enroll in a painting class or a ceramics class, buy a recipe book and cook new recipes every day, write some limericks, like whatever it is that is creative to you and that you can give yourself full permission to be bad at, just to be really bad at. And then aside from that, sort of taking time to slow down alone with your own thoughts every day. Mm-hmm. And so I really do mean alone, sort of no podcast, no book, no television, no friend, no child hanging on. You need to be alone with your thoughts for a period of time every day. Walking's a great one. Walking without your phone for half an hour. You need time and quiet to sort of be able to listen to what your inner voice is trying to tell you to do, because your inner voice knows what you need to do all the time. And we have so many ways of distracting, and it's so noisy typically in our regular lives that it's sort of impossible to hear that voice unless we take that time alone and unplugged. It's why I think we often have so many epiphanies in the shower.
Yeah,
because like, there's nothing blocking there's nothing blocking that inner voice for a hot minute, you know, just sort of standing there, and she finally gets a chance to be heard through all of the stuff that we're usually sort of bombarding ourselves with. So those would be sort of some things that I would suggest.
I love that. That's great advice. I've joked with my husband that I need a whiteboard in the shower because yes. I'm like, babe,
it all happens in there. Yes, it all happens in there.
So funny. So for the first time in months, for me, over the past few weeks, I've actually wanted to start picking up my camera. So I have been recently embarking on my own personal projects, and I'm doing actually self-portraits. I'm taking fine art classical work and I'm making myself the subject. So I'm loving the shopping, the styling, finding the perfect props and that part really is really easy for me. But the hard part for me is taking action, the artistic resistance. That's the part I struggle the most with. So do you have any advice on artistic resistance and how to push past it?
So first, you are speaking my language. Like, I love these questions so much. Second, I've been watching your portraits. They're so good. I love them so much. My favorite so far has been the milkmaid.
Oh, the milkmaid was so fun.
She just looks so pretty, and the colors, it's just so pleasant to, it just so makes me happy looking at it. Yeah. And I can see that they're bringing you so much joy, and they're bringing other people joy too. Like, I see everybody like commenting on them. And I think that's because people sort of recognize when someone is doing something from their soul and it resonates. That resistance that you're talking about is such a great sign. That's a good thing. We only feel that when we're doing something challenging and fulfilling and hard, what I call mm-hmm. the important work. So no one gets that foot dragging feeling about busy work, you know, or the stuff that doesn't make us feel stretched. We only get it when it comes to stuff that is in some way going to move the needle for us or break us through to another creative or personal or professional level. So I'm really excited to hear where this series takes you, because the fact that you're having that feeling about it means that it's really important. I love to use that resistance feeling as a compass. So when I start getting that foot dragging resistance feeling, that's when I know I'm headed in the right direction and that it's time to double down and charge at it. So I use this method to structure my creative working day. I break my day into four blocks. So I start every day with an artistic check-in. Then I do my important work, then I do my urgent work, and then if I feel like, if I've still got any gas left after that, then I do my busy work. So basically I begin every day with my morning pages, which is something recommended by The Artist Way, Julia Cameron, you probably know her. and then my reading. And then by about 6:30, I've finished that sort of check-in, and then I call what I do my important work. So this is purely tasks that give me that resistance feeling that you're talking about. And I found I can get sort of 3 hours of good, solid work done, sometimes up to 4 if I'm in a particular flow, in that first block of the day. And as soon as I feel myself fading, I call it, because nothing that comes after that is any good. So usually that's sort of about 10 o'clock or later if it's a school drop-off day, if it's a day that I'm in charge of school drop-off. And then I make a cuppa and maybe walk the dog. And then I know I've done my hard stuff for the day and I can relax. And that's when I turn on my phone and open the internet browser. I don't do those things until then. My phone goes off at nighttime when I go to bed. Doesn't go back on until after I've done my important work the next morning. And the reason is because I've found that that's what I have to do. I can't look at socials or email before I do my important work because it won't get done. I know this historically because the resistance kicks in and you just like, you feed off the email, you feed off the social media, people need me, this is super urgent, I've got to do it now. And then there goes your day. So I have to be really strict with myself. I think we probably all need to be strict with ourselves about it. I think probably resistance works the same way for all of us. I'll have my cuppa and then I do my emails, show up in my communities, and then I do my urgent jobs that I need to get done. So the urgent stuff is sort of stuff that we're often tempted to do first at the beginning of the day. But I don't think we should ever do the urgent stuff first, because the thing about urgent stuff is that it always gets done. You don't put off urgent stuff forever. You just can't. So it always gets done. So that's why I always do it second, because I know I will get to it. It's urgent, so it has to happen. I do my important work first, then the urgent stuff. And then busy work if I've got time. But if I find myself sort of scrolling on social media, I know I'm done. And I just call it and I either go inside or I head to school pickup or wherever I'm at with that day. So what I found is that whatever resistance is pointing at, do that thing and do it with your whole self before you do anything else, and then relax for the rest of the day knowing in sort of that peaceful bliss that you've done the hard thing. You've done what you needed to do.
I love that. I've actually never heard of that method and I flippin' love it.
Oh, thank you.
I love it. Urgent last.
Urgent last. Yep.
Now, in the category of important work, because my mind immediately goes to the urgent stuff. So how do you categorize the things as important versus urgent? Is it something like, is it just based on that resistance feeling? Or is it like, because to me, my immediate thing is like, okay, like I've got to order client cards or an album. Like that's important. That's probably so urgent.
That's urgent stuff. Yeah. So important for me is anything that gives me resistance feelings, anything that I would happily make excuses to put off, anything I would happily put aside so I could order more cards and edit and do all these things that I can make of all these reasons why they need to happen now. It's anything that's going to move the needle, basically. Anything that's going to propel me artistically or professionally is important. Everything else is just treading water, you know, like there'll always be more editing to come. There'll always be more client orders that need to be made. There'll always be another email to answer. So those things like that come up every day, that there's nothing important about those things. I mean, I'm not saying that they're not important to do. Obviously, we need to do them. But in terms of what's important to you on a personal, professional or artistic level, they're not important. So I prioritize that stuff that's going into in some way break me through a new ceiling, lift me up a level, and move the needle.
I love that so much. I think you may have changed my life. Because I'm going to try this. Because honestly, because like if you think about it, because I do all those things that I shouldn't do. I got up, I'm like on my phone, I'm answering the emails, I'm doing the things, I'm in the community early, I'm looking at TikTok, like I'm doing, and I'm like, but am I living my best life, and am I getting the juice out of life that I need to be getting?
Yes, and that is the question. Right? It's not just about getting that important work done. Lisa, since I've been doing it this way, I am so much happier. I'm just so much happier. Not being sort of beholden to a screen, I would sort of wake up and there'd be emails and my anxiety would be elevated because I need to get back to these people, and that sort of sense of, that sort of anxious, fretting feeling.
That constant hollowness in your chest.
Day. When I sort of speak about this to people, people say, oh, no, I couldn't do that because I run a business. But truly what I found is that people are not expecting you to reply to them instantly. They're just not, obviously within reason, get back to someone within 24 hours if it's important, but it doesn't have to be right now, it just doesn't. I don't have Facebook on my phone. It was a trap for me and I was in it all the time. And I told myself at the time I had to be in it because I run businesses and I'm a community leader, and I have to be I have to be there. What would they, but actually I show up in a much more present way when I just allocate, this is my 20 minutes, I'm going to go and show up and I'm going to be present and I'm going to help and I'm going to be, I'm going to be a helper and I'm going to be, see how I'm needed. And I set that time to do that is what I just get way more from it than back in the day where I used to be sitting on the sofa sort of hurried, quickly, hastily trying to write a reply to someone on Facebook and my kids, they're pulling on me and he wants me and my rage level's up because my anxiety's up and I'm snapping back at him. Just give me a second. It just wasn't nice. It wasn't nice. It wasn't nice to me or him or the person I was helping on the other end because they were sort of getting this truncated, sort of rushed half response that didn't do justice to what they needed from me at the time. So yeah, I've just found this has been quite life-changing.
I love that so much. I'm going to try it. Now, do you have morning worksheets where you're going through and you're writing down after your morning pages what's important, what's urgent? And
I do my morning pages. So that's sort of 3 pages of a stream of consciousness writing. And honestly, that is it will change your life because it just sort of gives that inner voice inside you. And you can call it some people believe in God and they call it God's voice. I'm spiritual. For me, it's the universe, the universe talking to me and telling me where I was always supposed to be and where I'm always supposed to go. So that's what the voice is to me. It's the universe talking to me as sort of just an extension of myself. And all of the answers come from there. You already have all of the answers inside you. So doing that stream of consciousness gives you a chance to listen and sit and wait and gives them a chance to come out. And then I will read, at the moment I'm rereading The Artist's Way, so I'll read a chapter of that. Otherwise, if I'm reading something else, I'll read a chapter of something else, sort of feel a little bit inspired, light me up just a little bit. And then I can get into my important work from there.
I love that. Oh, well, I'm definitely going to be trying that.
Yeah, please do. And let me know how you go.
I will. I can't wait to start. It's funny because I started rereading The Artist's Way again in the summer, and I started doing the morning pages while we were on vacation, and then life happened, and then it falls away. So
it really does. And that's what I've found in the past as well. But when I'm doing it, everything in my life is aligned, everything. And obviously I'll miss a day here or there, the kids will wake up particularly early or someone needs me or we're not at home or whatever the reasons. But I always get back to it as soon as I can because I just know the power of it, the power of it for me. Yeah.
I love it. All right. So do you have any personal projects going on right now?
Yeah, I guess so. My curiosity lately has led me through the morning pages to kick off a new project that I'm really excited about. So what I'm sort of preparing to kick off is a Memory Catcher membership.
Okay.
So Black Friday is going to go. There'll be a special introductory Black Friday sale. But basically it's going to be a space where I can more closely help artists explore and grow as photographers for sure. But the focus of the Memory Catcher Club will be sort of broader, not just photography, but about tapping into the creative self more holistically. The sort of stuff that we've been talking about here together. So there'll be weekly content in the membership to help with editing. There'll be guest speakers every month that come in and talk about an area of expertise. There'll be monthly shooting challenges, but then there'll also be sort of non-photographer projects every month. There's going to be a book club every month. There's going to be critique clubs. There's just going to be like a whole lot of stuff in there to hone your skills and practices to get better at tuning into your inner artists and listening to that inner voice. Yeah, so I'm really excited about sort of how the next 12 months is going to see it grow.
I love it. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you.
I can't wait. I'll sign up on Fuck Friday. I can't wait.
It's basically like all the things that make me happy and light me up into a membership so that I can just have an excuse to do it with other people. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
So what three things do you want to be remembered for?
Being kind, being generous, like with the things I know, being a good sharer and a good teacher, and being a good mum. Being a good mum is important to me.
Love that. What do you like to cook the most?
Oh, Lisa, I'm the worst cook.
Really?
I'm the worst cook. I've got to tell you, like your little cooking, remember you doing the little cooking videos there for
I do
a while?
My pretend cooking show. Yeah.
Oh my God. That just like made my life. I love that so much. Please make
I need to
one.
Bring them back.
Oh,
I
please
need to bring
do.
Them back.
Just so funny. So funny. I'm a terrible cook. So I sort of, when I say I'm a terrible cook, I'm just not interested in cooking, I guess. It's not something that excites me. It's not something that delights me. So we tend to sort of eat a lot of just like real food, just whole food. We eat a lot of salads, very simple ingredients, lots of fresh food. And I'm not very good at combining things and standing over stoves and waiting for stuff, cleaning. I'm not very good at cleaning the kitchen. I don't really do much cooking.
I love it. Well, you can't be perfect at everything.
Oh, Lisa.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, gosh. What did I want to be? I don't know. I wasn't really super forward thinking when I was young. I sort of had a really wobbly, rocky, troubled childhood. I was raised by a parent who had narcissistic personality disorder. So things were shaky and volatile.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to be okay.
Yeah.
When I grew up, you know, I was as far sort of as I was thinking. If my child self saw me now, she'd just be so happy.
She'd be so proud of you.
She would. And I think she'd be particularly happy about the way I'm raising my children and this peaceful, loving home where they sort of have freedom to explore and be curious and to be confident and happy and well adjusted. So yeah, I'm really sort of proud of that.
Love that. Where do you feel most centered and happy?
When I'm sitting in morning sunlight. Just the new house that we're moving into has a room that gets all this morning light, and I'm just really excited about just sitting there in the winter like a cat and just like,
yeah,
feeling that soft, warm, yeah, morning sunlight is where I feel most myself, I think.
What are you most grateful for in this season of life?
I think the ability to live as my most true and authentic self. So to be able to have the freedom to be able to sort of indulge in my creative whims, all while being sort of present and available at home for my family. A couple of months ago, my husband walked in sort of mid-morning and I was standing over the top of the table taking a picture of some flowers or something that had just like caught my eye, and I sort of, you know, I get like trapped. Like I'll like, yeah, I'll just take one photo and then it's an hour later or 2 hours later and I'm just trapped, and he's just like looked at me and laughed and he said, "So this is your day then?" And the fact that I can live like that, like just sort of,
yeah,
take a creative whim and run with it in that way is just such a privilege and such a pleasure and something that I'm just so completely grateful for.
Love that. So where can our listeners learn more from you? Where can they find you?
They can find me at We Are Memory Catchers. So on Instagram at We Are Memory Catchers. We've got a Facebook community called We Are Memory Catchers, which is just a beautiful space. the websites, We Are Memory Catchers. You can go there for a whole heap of free resources and to learn more about the Memory Catchers Club that's coming really soon, and to sign up to be notified when the next round of telling stories starts. I'll launch another round of telling stories in 2023, which is going to be really excellent. And I think it'll be the fourth or fifth round. There's already sort of quite a long list of people who've joined, added their name to the wait list. So you can go there to the We Are Memory Catchers website, add your name to the wait list if you'd like to sort of join in for that 15-week deep dive into the specifics of how to make more intentional and compelling and artful storytelling imagery. It's a lot of fun. Everybody who says it has changed their work in all the best ways, and that they just never sort of look at photography, their own work or others, the same again. So I'm pretty proud of telling stories. It's one of the joys of my life. So if you want to sort of join us for 2023, we'll probably kick off around March-ish. Come and put your name down for that.
I love that. Well, that's actually how I found you. One of our team members has one of your students from Telling Stories, I believe. And she's like, Lisa, this was life-changing. You have to get in touch with Michelle.
Yes, so. That's right. That's how you first reach out for first Milky Way. Amazing. Isn't it amazing how things fall into place?
I know. It's so neat. So I love to end my interviews just with this last question. And it is, what are you currently curious about or artistically curious about?
Flower pressing. It's spring here. I'm really excited to go out and collect some flowers today, so I can experiment with sort of pressing them. I've got this beautiful flower press that my friend's husband made in his carpentry business, and it's amazing. And so I'm really excited about pressing these flowers and seeing what I can make with them when sort of our autumn rolls around and I'm lonely for the smell of jasmine in the air. I'll pull out all my pressed flowers and see what I can do with them.
I love that. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for joining me today. It's always such an incredible pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love our chats, Lisa.
Oh, my friends, I hope you loved this conversation just as much as I did. I am sending you so much of my light and my love today and every single day. We'll see you next time.